an Ironic Media production. Visit us at ironicmedia.com.
I've had a lot of adult children say, oh, my mother's 40. And I go in and she's not. In the areas like in the kitchen and the living room and her main bedroom, they work. They're fine. There may be some clutter, sure. And yes, in other rooms, there might be boxes stacked or whatever, but it's called fatigue. As you get older, you don't have as much, my mom used to call it gumption. You just don't have that get up and go that you used to have, especially if there's some illness or the joints are creaking and things like that. I mean, that's just normal. And so it's not hoarding at all. It's just, it's completely understandable. And then again, as I mentioned with people with dementia, they forget it was there and they leave it there and then things start to pile up and that sort of thing. So there's all kinds of reasons. And there is a clutter hoarding scale. You can actually look up online. It's a 1 to 5 hoarding scale. And it's actually broken down by all kinds of different things, not just the amount of stuff, but also what kind of repair the home is in, pet situation, that kind of thing.
Dementia Discussions. Here to help and empower our heroic caregivers with knowledge and experience. Dementia Discussions with the caregivers themselves and memory loss professionals. Here to help with 30 years as a geriatric social worker is your Dementia Discussions host, Barbara Hammond.
Hello and welcome to Dementia Discussions. Today on the show, my guest is Marty Stevens Huebner. Marty is a senior move manager and the founder and CEO of Clear Home Solutions. We're going to talk about that in a minute, but first, Marty, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much, Barbara. I'm very honored to be on with you today.
Before we get started, I would love to know what brought you to the field of geriatrics. We all have our personal stories, and it would be great to know yours.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we really do all have our stories, don't we? Mm-hmm. This is actually my fourth business. Clear Home Solutions began as a result of my father. Actually, my mom died when I was young. She was only 58. I was 26. Dad made it to 90 back in Buffalo. I was the, what we call the DA in the family, the designated adult flying back and forth to look at it. There's always one, right? One. Yeah. And so I was going back and forth to take care of him. And my business at that time was my eco handbag line, Rebags. And the business, for obvious reasons, took a big hit because I was traveling so much to take care of Dad. And I wouldn't change that for anything to have that time with him. But I realized I really loved what I was learning about later life and wondered if I could possibly create a business in working with people who are older and their families and things like that. And I discovered this amazing niche of helping older adults and their families deal with the things they love. You deal with the physical part of their lives, and I deal with the personal property part of their lives, the things, their treasures of a lifetime, and all the other stuff that goes with that.
The emotional connection they have to all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. So it was your dad, that connection with your dad. Yeah.
I have a
similar story. But
and
yes.
Also my aunt, his sister, who had dementia. And so in shepherding them through later life and seeing my friends go through it too, I realized from a personal standpoint how rewarding that would be. And honestly, because I was a businesswoman and entrepreneur, I realized too that the market was very big and only grow. So I launched Clear Home Solutions 9 years ago.
Wow.
And I've never looked back.
Isn't that great? Good for you.
Oh, thank you.
Good for you. Yeah. So you're, as I said, a senior move manager. So talk about that. I have to say, it's a field I didn't know existed. I had no idea about you guys until I was introduced to you, I think, one day at a networking meeting, and have used you ever since.
Thank you.
So but yeah,
I'm honored.
Absolutely. So tell us, what is a senior manager?
I have to say really quickly, I had heard so much about you before I even met you. Like, Barbara Hammond, because you have such a great reputation throughout Los Angeles with people who work with older adults and their families. So with senior move management, it's the industry that's still in its nascency. It's still fairly new. And there is a national organization, the National Association of Senior and Specialty Move Managers. And we are really project managers for moves, especially for later life years for older adults. We come in and we do everything from the floor planning to the sorting and downsizing and making sure everything gets packed up securely. And then we supervise the day of the move, the day out, keep watch on the movers, make sure they're moving steadily, not slowly, and dragging their feet. And then on the other end, once everything's there, we use the floor plan to set things up. We unpack and organize everything, put the toiletries away, make the bed, set everything up, put the photos and pictures on the wall so that it's really turnkey. So somebody, especially who's going to assisted living, who's been very nervous about it, they walk in and it's a reflection of the home they've left behind. And there's often a lot of tears and it's really beautiful. And then we go back and we clear out the home completely through selling items, donating items. There's always some haul away. And then it's ready for sale or for lease. So the idea is really to take that whole burden off of people. Because frequently, older adults have been living in their homes for 20, 30, 40 years. We moved someone who was 89 years old. We were moving him out of the home he had been born in.
Oh my gosh.
That was amazing. There's a lot of stuff and a lot of history there. It's fascinating.
So when you say there's a lot of tears, you're meaning when they walk into their new room, there are tears of joy.
Yes, tears of joy.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes, tears of joy. I should have been more specific about that. Yes. And often we cry right along with them. It's just a moving experience. They're so relieved to walk in and it feels familiar to them. And especially with dementia, it can be a precipitous decline if they walk and it feels completely sterile or different or what have you, and there's nothing familiar there to anchor them there. Very important to really have it done in a way that's very kind, very gentle, with the things that they've known for years, with photos of their family and friends that they are familiar with, that they've grown up with. One of the things for me that's really key is, think about it, when you're with your bed, that's the, what's across from you when you're sitting up in bed, it's the last thing you see at night before you fall asleep, and it's the first thing you see in the morning. So for me, what's across from the bed has to be something, especially when someone has dementia, something that's very familiar, something, like I say, that kind of anchors them, that lets them know that they're somewhere safe, that it feels like home to them. That's one of the most important things, especially for people who have dementia.
I get that. Yes. I wouldn't have thought about like what you have right around your bed. So that's a really good point. Do you find you're mostly like the scenario is mostly people staying in their same city, moving into assisted living? Is that your usual scenario?
Primarily. We also work with people who have with their families who have passed away. So we end up clearing a lot of homes out so the family can move forward. But yeah, mostly it's people who need to move to assisted living, although it's been tricky since COVID. We did, especially for 2020 and especially the first part of 2021, there were just a lot of clear outs because people were still very nervous and there was no vaccine.
So they were clearing out, they were leaving their assisted living to go back home, or where were they, what were they doing?
Well, frequently somebody had passed or they had already moved. Maybe they'd moved back, you know, to back east, for example, to be with their family, have them closer because COVID was such a big
scare. Oh, that's what you mean, in terms of clear out, like clearing out their home here. And I see.
Exactly. So many communities were basically locked down for most of 2020. I would say most of our moves are into assisted living locally. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, because we have this wonderful national association, although it's actually international too, we have senior move managers in Australia, in New Zealand, in England, and Canada, of course. But what I can do when people are either moving out of town or they're coming here to be closer to their families in assisted living, what I can do is just reach out to one of my colleagues whom I know in Wisconsin, in Boston, Buffalo, my hometown, up in Seattle, and work together to make sure the move goes as smoothly as possible. Because moving is one of those life events that's so traumatic for people, especially if they've been in the same home for decades. And I call it the emotional flu of moving, because you're not going to feel right during it. And we come in as the emotional decongestant, the emotional cough syrup, so that you can really function during it. I always tell people when they're telling me that they're just feeling so awful and that's just, I feel like I'm going crazy. I say, welcome to the world of moving. This is normal. It's not fun, this feeling, but just know this is normal. This is called moving, what you're feeling right now. And at least then people realize, okay, it's not just me. Because how many moves have I gone through in the last 9 years with clients? It's just normal. You know how people call it relocation? Mm-hmm. I call it dislocation because you feel out of joint until you've been settled into the new place for at least a month. And especially with people with dementia, they have to get used to this whole way of navigating. And now if they're late stage dementia, kind of every day is like that. Mm-hmm. But when it's early to mid stage, it can be very confusing. All the more reason that it needs to that shift to this new habitat and this new community needs to be done as gently as possible, as carefully as possible.
I absolutely agree. It's so disorienting. I mean, you hear families talk about just going to like a son or daughter's house for a weekend is disorienting, let alone into a completely new environment, like an assisted living or a memory unit. Oh my goodness. Yeah. So disorienting at first.
And especially, and for good reason,
sure,
those areas in assisted livings are contained so that people don't go wandering and go out and, oh God, aren't those stories awful when someone goes and is gone for 24 hours, 36 hours, and no one knows where they are. And so, but that's a new experience for them too, because they can't just walk out the front door.
Right.
Which is good. It's better for them, but that's disorienting too.
So most of your moves are from the house of decades to a much smaller living space. Lots of downsizing. Or sometimes I've heard you say right sizing.
That's true. And right sizing for the new place. And it's fascinating because it can be a treasure hunt because we're going up in the attic and finding those photos or whatever that people haven't looked at in years and years and years. Reaching into the far corners of closets, we find all kinds of things. And the tricky thing is when people say, oh, I haven't seen that in years. Yeah, I need to keep that. The point is, you haven't seen it in years. You haven't used it in years, so you probably don't need to keep it, especially since you're moving to a smaller place. So that's always quite fascinating.
Most people have so much stuff in their home of decades. So do they look at you and say, how are we ever going to get through all of this?
Yes, they do. They do. And so we offer a free consultation and we put together a project plan, an estimate. And that project plan is never set in stone for our clients. They work with us as much or as little as they want and need to. Because it's really wonderful when family members or friends really come in and pitch in. And that's fantastic, especially with people who have strong family connections and especially their adult children live locally. They frequently don't need our services. I like to say our biggest competition are the family members and friends, which is beautiful. But, you know, sometimes it also becomes something like an archaeological dig because we are hoarding specialists. And again, it's amazing what you find. And one of the things that I have to do with my staff, I have a wonderful staff. We like to say where compassion meets know-how. So you have to blend those things. I'm very particular about who I will hire. They really have to have such strong empathy. You know how they say that those are, you know, empathy and things like that are the soft skills. I say those are the hard skills. Mm-hmm. You can't learn that.
Absolutely. You cannot learn them. You have to come in with the passion for this population and for this job. Absolutely.
Yeah. They can learn how to sort and pack and supervise and all that sort of stuff. But in terms of that empathy, it's so important. Sometimes hoarding goes with dementia because they forget where things are. And especially if it's early to mid stage, frequently you'll see a lot of things out on surfaces because they need to see where it is. If it's behind a cabinet or a door or in a drawer, they forget where it is. And then they get, especially if it's something important, they get very concerned. But to just be patient with clients with dementia, and I've told them, I train my staff so that they understand that when they bring up something, for example, like, oh, where's Susan? And Susan is his wife who's been dead for 6 years. You don't say, oh, she passed away, and have him go through all that grief all over again. You go into their world. I mean, people can feel like they're lying, but really you're in their world because in their mind, she's here. So to save them that grief, just say, oh, Susan went to the grocery store and she's going to be back in about half an hour or so. But she wanted us to work on going through these tours over here. And then it's redirecting them. And then they're not suffering as a result. They're just like, oh, she went to the grocery store. And they accept that and just move forward. Things like that. And also with hoarding, just being very patient, because there are all kinds of reasons people hoard. Some really have hoarding disorder. Their brains are different. They're just built that way. And with other people, as people get older, I've had a lot of adult children say, oh, my mother's hoarding. And I go in and she's not. In the areas like in the kitchen and the living room and her main bedroom, they work. They're fine. There may be some clutter, sure. And yes, in other rooms, there might be boxes stacked or whatever, but it's called fatigue. As you get older, you don't have as much, my mom used to call it gumption. You just don't have that get up and go that you used to have, especially if there's some illness or the joints are creaking and things like that. I mean, that's just normal. And so it's not hoarding at all. It's just, it's completely understandable. And then again, as I mentioned with people with dementia, they forget it was there and they leave it there and then things start to pile up and that sort of thing. So there's all kinds of reasons. And there is a clutter hoarding scale. You can actually look up online. It's a 1 to 5 hoarding scale. And it's actually broken down by all kinds of different things, not just the amount of stuff, but also what kind of repair the home is in, pet situation, that kind of thing.
Oh, that's interesting. So you can go in there. So some people probably feel like they're hoarders or their parents are hoarders. But when you see the situation, they're really not. Like, there's just maybe a pile of papers here or there. Yeah, which is pretty normal.
I will tell you, Barbara, that when someone calls us and says, I'm a hoarder, I think I'm a hoarder, we know they're not. Because hoarders don't self-identify because they don't realize that they're hoarding. We have a term actually in our trade called clutter blindness. And I can give you a good story that really reveals that. There was a wonderful woman, a wonderful daughter with a mother. The father/husband had passed away several years earlier, as I recall. And once we eventually got into the home, 5+ on the hoarding scale, it was very severe. But in the beginning, the mother would let us into the carport. I remember being there for the consultation. And yet there was a hoarding situation in the carport. Got it. We were talking it through. And then the daughter had told me that there were 2 cars parked down in the street. This is up in the hills a bit. So parked, tucked away on the street. And she said, there's a lot of stuff in there. So as we came out, I started approaching cars. And I can't remember. I think the tires were flat. They may have been. I can't remember. But it's clear they hadn't been moved in years. And they were packed full of things. Magazines, this, that, and the other. And so I approached it. And I said, oh, I see that there's some things in here. Do you want us to take care of this as well? And she said, oh, there's nothing in there. Barbara, there was so much stuff in there. And I said, well, I see some mag. So I had to be, I want to be careful and respectful. Be respectful of people like this. It's so important, building that trust. I said, I see some magazines in here. She said, oh, there's just a few. I said, well, we can help you with this too. Because she literally didn't, she couldn't perceive. She couldn't see the volume of items that were in there.
Wow, the scope of the problem. That's
clutter blindness.
Yeah, clutter blindness. Wow. Yeah, then you knew exactly what her home was going to look like.
And you have to be kind and respectful because, I mean, let's face it, people dismiss older adults. They pretend that they're not there. They get ignored. I have a friend who wrote this amazing book called Squint, Revisioning the Second Half of Life. And sometimes it's just people don't know what to say, how to connect. And you can just talk about the usual sort of things going on. That's okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, absolutely.
Yeah, you can learn so much and it's so fun. And
that's what I say. Living history. Our clients are living history.
We really are.
So great.
We really are.
We learn so much from them. So many life lessons I've learned from my clients.
Oh, yes.
Just great. It must take a long time to get through all of the stuff.
It's a big project. It really is because when we're first going through there, there are piles and piles of things. There are often walkways through it. And if it's a severe hoard, they're literally like rabbit trails and you have to be really careful.
Yes. You and I actually had a client like that. Remember, they actually moved into their next door apartment.
The house had become a storage unit. Yeah. And that happens. I mean, frequently garages that are attached to homes or not attached to homes become our storage units. Mm-hmm. And the goal is to get the cars back in there somehow, or at least one car. So that's always an adventure. But yeah, they are big projects. And we really do have to go through everything because we found $50,000 in a bag of old bras.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. $10,000 in some sneakers, diamond rings in pockets. You have to go through all the pockets of the clothing, fan the books as you go through them because things fall out. Cash, checks, social security cards. I remember early on, I remember finding a beautiful strand of real pearls tucked away in a file folder in a cabinet that was like one filing cabinet that was part of like a 5 file cabinet set. You just never know what you're going to find. Or, oh my goodness, there was one time with someone, a client we were working with, and the last day we were there at her place, I spotted something underneath a shelf, whatever, that had been missed. I pulled it out, and it was a child's drawing, and it had clearly been there a long time. And it was signed, I'll make up a name, it signed Stephen or something like that, by a child. And she said, "Where did this come from?" And I said, "I just saw it underneath there." Well, it turns out that drawing was made by her son, Stephen, at the age of 7, who had passed away in a car accident at 17. And so that was extraordinary for her to see that. And in a way, I think she ended up feeling like it would, you know, like it was his blessing that she was doing what she was doing. It was very surprising.
I bet. Oh my goodness.
I remember going through my father's stuff and finding his old Navy pilot logs in like way in the back of one file cabinet. And I would love, we talked a lot about over the years, his Navy pilot stuff during World War II. But I would have loved to have seen those and gone, because he would have brightened up and gone through these and told me more stories. So,
which your clients probably do as you bring out these hidden treasures. They probably talk about their memories associated with that, right? I would imagine you hear all these great stories.
We really do. It is things I'll say to people. It's like, when we're talking to adult children, we will tell them, look, we are here to hear all those stories that you're sick of hearing. And we work while we listen and all of that. It's very funny, but they are, we get, it's this insight into people, and especially it's really their history told through their objects. There's a great show on PBS called Legacy List with Matt Paxton, who's a friend, and he really has this idea, if you watch the show, he has this idea that really find the 8 to 10 objects that really say who you are. What's your legacy that you want to pass on? It doesn't have to be 10 objects, but just a small number of projects that really say what your life has been about. What's important to pass on to the next generation? I love that he has developed that concept because I've certainly put it into action in my own life. I was going through a closet and I came across from my handbag line, which I mentioned earlier, a whole spiral notebook of the press clippings. I said, I'm keeping that. That's part of my legacy.
There you go. That's so great to identify those key objects in your life. That really
same thing with the photos. Same thing with the photos. Yes, you can digitize and organize photos. And we do that for our clients. But you don't need to keep everything. I mean, I am the keeper of all the family photos. And I'm slowly over the years going through them. And I look at them and I say, if there's nothing on the back, and I don't recognize anybody in the picture, bye-bye. I don't know who that is. I don't know how to find out who that is. And also if things are blurry or whatever, just get rid of them. You don't need them.
You're not throwing away
the people. It's just this piece of paper with something on it.
Interesting. Yeah, you are not throwing away the people. That's true. You're just throwing away the photo, the people you don't know, and it's okay.
Exactly.
You're not going to disappear with it. Yeah. That's so, you reminded me of the days that I got rid of like the stuff my mother, I had shipped cross country from my mother's house. And finally I let go of all these antique books. And it was such a funny moment where like the The thrift store looked at me and said, "Are you sure?" And I said, "Yes, it's okay. My mother is in my heart. She's not in my book, in these books." So,
exactly. Yeah. And I did the same thing. Look what I do for a living. And still, I kept a lot of stuff. And then, well, a lot of stuff. I mean, it depends on your perspective. Dad was from Buffalo. There are things that came out. But it's sort of like keeping things and then doing some kind of a second culling of it a few years later. Because we tend to keep too much stuff, not only because of sentimental reasons, but also, especially when someone passes, that suddenly there is this list of things that you immediately have to do. There's the funeral, there's getting the death certificates, there's dealing with the estate and the executive, being the executor, all of that stuff. All the while, you're grieving. You've lost this person who you love so much. And it's hard to make, especially when it comes to things, with stuff, clear decisions. That's where we come in, to really ask that. We didn't ever tell people, you have to throw this out. That's not our place. But over the years, we just know what questions to ask to help people discern what their favorite and most useful items are. And especially after someone passes, thinking of their legacy, what really says who they were. Also, what is useful to you?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, especially if they're moving from their home of decades into a smaller place.
Yeah,
you can only take so much. And it's interesting I looked at your website and it said, you have a great website. And I think it points out some of the usual things we all do. And it's true, when you first move, like I see clients who have moved into assisted living, they often take too much stuff. Yeah, I'm sure you see that all the time. And so, of course, they've moved in and there's still boxes sitting there. They've been there for 2 years. There's nowhere to put them. So yeah.
There really isn't. And one of the things that we recommend to people is, we'll say, look, let's do the floor plan. Let's pick out the furniture and let's get that in place. And then take the clothing that you always wear. I mean, honestly, and I'm sure this is myself included, with our clothing, we only wear about 10 to 20% of it regularly. The rest kind of sits there. And so we'll say, let's go through, show us what you wear all the time. What have you worn like in the last year? If there's dust on it, probably don't need to keep it. And if you haven't seen it in years, if it doesn't fit and or it's compromised in some way, there are buttons missing, there's a tear, the moth's got at it, let it go. Let it go. We can always bring more from your home after you've moved in. And you know, once we get the furniture moved in, that's the big bulky stuff. Other small items can be carried in a car. Let's just get you set up in there, because usually what they end up taking and what we end up setting up is plenty. But this way, they don't feel like they don't have access. I always tell them, your house is not going to fall off a cliff the day you move in. Still there. Now, there are times when it has to be immediate, but that's rare.
And in the day you move out of it. Yeah, it's so true. It's not going to fall off a cliff the day you move out of it. It's still going to be there. Yeah, absolutely.
And if you find there are things that you're missing, we can bring them over. Also, especially people, women primarily, who've done a lot of cooking over the years, frequently in assisted living, most of you have maybe a little kitchenette, and sometimes not even that. But they still want to take their cooking things, so they don't want to let go of them. And that's also when we say, let's move you in and let's see. Because the great thing is, you don't have to cook anymore. And that's often, especially women, are happy to move into assisted living because they're sick and tired of cooking. Have someone else do it for you.
Mm-hmm. So true. You can always get things from the house afterwards. And I have to say, when you talked before about the tears of joy when they see their place at the assisted living, that was me. When I walked into clients' homes, like rooms that you had done, their units, tears of joy. I could not believe how it was set up. Like I didn't imagine that you guys really do kind of recreate their living environment. So there are their pictures, even more beautifully displayed than they had them at home. So it's really like your interior decorators too.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. That's really lovely. And that's a testament to my staff. They're amazing. And it really is great to have that chance to do that for people. I remember there was a client, she was so wonderful. She had this vast collection of pitchers, P-I-T-C-H-E-R-S, ceramic pitchers. And they ran all along this wall with the fireplace that had a mantle that went the whole way across the wall and also a hearth that went all the way across. And they were filled with pitchers. And obviously she's moving into assisted living. She can't take all of them. So I asked her, I said, see if you can pick out your 10 or 12 favorite. And I figured if she got it down to 20, I'd be lucky. She actually got it down to less than 15, as I recall. It's been a while. But I remember when I first walked in there and saw all of those, it was like fireworks and confetti colors. I mean, it was just wild. But when she pulled out her favorites, then it was artwork. Those were her favorites. And you can see the skill and the craftsmanship that went into them. That was extraordinary.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. I didn't realize, I mean, it's more than just moving people. Really, there's so much more involved in what you guys do. And that's throughout your industry. That's everyone does that.
Yeah, that you have to have compassion pulled in. I mean, a lot of us also do professional organizing. But
yeah, that's right.
And a lot of professional organizers think they can also, oh, this will be easy. We can do this too. But a lot of them work on just kitchens and closets and things like that. And I have not hired people because they thought it was going to be what I call pretty organizing, like just dealing with the kitchens, just dealing with the closets and that sort of thing. We get in there, we work. You're reaching into the backs of closets, stooping down and getting into the bottom drawers and the, you know, backs of the bottom cabinets, and you're on your feet all the time. And you really have to have the compassion for people and the patience and the understanding that they're going through this. I had one employee, he was in his 30s, and the client he was working with, who's a man, was kind of butting heads with him. And so we had to talk about it. And he says, yeah, I tell him, like, I get what he's going through. I understand it. And he just says, no, you don't. No, you don't. I said, look, you don't. You don't understand what he's going through. This is the thing. We know how to take care of children in our culture because we remember being 5 years old. We don't remember being 95. At least I don't at this point.
We haven't been there.
We haven't been there.
Yeah.
So we don't know. And frankly, you never know one person's experience because they're inside them and you are inside you. And so I recommended to him saying, just when he says that, instead of saying, oh, I get it. I know. Just say, I can only imagine how difficult it must be for you. I can only imagine. What do you want to tell me about this?
Right.
Let them talk about it. I always tell people who we're working with who are feeling very emotional. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm so emotional. I said, no, let it out. Let it out. Don't bottle it up. Because when people are like, no, no, it's fine. There's inevitably some sort of explosion. Right. Sometimes a fit of anger, more likely. I literally had one adult daughter doubled over sobbing one time going through her mother's artwork.
I'm sure.
It's so hard
for
her.
So hard. And so hard for, the senior. Oh, I'm sure. So hard.
Yeah. And in that case, her mother hadn't passed away. Her mother had dementia. Ugh. And they were so close. And she was losing her mother. She took such great care of her. So sad.
So it's symbolic. She's losing her mother, but she's also losing her mother's things. And that's what triggered all that emotion, right?
Yeah.
And it's really symbolic of our mortality, losing this revered model in our life.
You're losing your mom, whether she's gone physically or her mind is dissipating.
Yeah. Oh, losing. It's a loss. Yeah. Oh, you have a tough job.
Well, yeah, and yet it's rewarding because at the end of the day, we can go home, no matter how tough the job is, and just know we really alleviated somebody's burden.
That is very true. It's moving, like we started, it's so stressful. It's such an overwhelming task. I think everyone looks around and says, how can I ever move from my house?
Yeah.
How can I ever get out of here? Yeah.
Even if you're 25 or 22 and everything fits in a backpack or one suitcase or whatever, you're still being dislocated.
Yeah.
Now, it's one thing if you choose, especially the oftentimes like the younger crowd now, they're because they can work remotely, they're nomadic, but that's a choice. And there is something or someone that means home to them that they've packed away and that travels with them. But especially when you've been planted, I've been in my home for over 25 years. I'm used to being here, and I know when I move, and at some point I will, that going through everything and planting myself elsewhere, I'll have to get used to that. And I'll have my own issues. Trust me, I'll have my own issues going through this.
Yeah,
I will. It's different. It's so much easier to deal with other people's stuff. It's so much easier. Somebody else's, not my own.
Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh my goodness. So you guys not only do moves, but you do inventory.
Yeah, because frequently, especially when someone's passed or when someone has moved to assisted living and what's left behind needs to be taken care of, dispersed in one way or another. Sometimes it's just beneficiaries or family members that live in disparate areas. Somebody could be working in London, we're in Los Angeles, somebody could be in Rhode Island or what have you. And so it's difficult and can be very expensive to travel back and forth, plus taking time off of work and all of that. More often than not, it's battling beneficiaries of an estate. And then also sometimes acrimonious divorces or the silver or gray divorces that are happening now. People aren't getting divorced in their later years, more frequently. And again, there's this house full of items and stuff that needs to be gone through. And when it's that kind of situation, either any of those situations, we can go in and document what's there. We are the neutral third party that can go in there and document things. Sometimes it's just a simple photographic inventory so that everybody can see what's there and pick and choose. Often when we're pulled into it, it's getting a bit more contentious and legal. I think the biggest report we've kicked out was 430 or 460 pages and more, because that's when we have to do the full documentation, photographs, documenting what it is, that kind of thing. And there's a really wonderful online platform called FairSplit.com, FairSplit, where it's set up not only for the inventory, but also it has a system that really helps an estate be dispersed fairly and equitably, both in a financial sense, but also in an emotional, sentimental sense. Mm. There's this whole system set up. So that's wonderful. But yeah, with the inventories, and also for estate planning purposes, or estate, more for estate taxes. Mm. We get a lot of inventories toward the end of the year, especially December. There's always an emergency one or two that has to happen before the close of the year for the estate taxes. Yeah. And so it's just helpful. Also, sometimes for insurance purposes, if it's a higher end client or family, they just want to know what they have and have it documented.
You and I worked on a case, pretty well-known actress in the back in her day, and you had, and I hadn't thought about this, there was some furniture pieces that you thought the auction houses might like. And so you guys have relationships with local auction houses.
We do auction houses. We actually do a lot of online estate sales now with a company called Maxwell. We partner with them and set things up and run those, because frequently people have a household full of items and they don't have a Picasso in the attic or anything like that, but they have a lot of items that people can certainly use. And so we do run these online auctions in partnership with Maxwell. And those have been really effective. And they're fairly easy to do. It takes a few weeks to get it all together because Maxwell has its own way of doing things. And also that you want to have the auction going on online for about a week or so. But it's a very effective way of dispersing and selling your basic household full of items. It's really wonderful. And also higher end stuff too. Absolutely. We try to get the auction houses and the estate sale companies on board. It's just, there's such a dearth of items out there, especially furniture, that they just won't take on. And they want a certain amount of items because obviously they're companies and they need to be profitable and all that sort of thing. So that's why we started stepping into the online auctions ourselves, just because it was awful to see things not go to people who really cared about them. Even donation companies, they're full up because the aging population, people are downsizing like crazy. Plus the millennials and the Generation Z, they're minimalists. They just want a table where they can eat at and also put their laptop. That's all they want. They don't want these elaborate roll-top desks that are beautiful. They don't want them.
So in general, how much, like, do you guys charge by the job or by the hour, or all the company, all your colleagues in, out in the country, is everyone, the agency, different, or is there a kind of an agency standard? How does that work?
We are by the hour, to the quarter hour, however much people want to work with us. We do offer packages, like 4-hour package. It's nice, so you can give it to somebody or they can just test us out. You know what, it's making sure that they feel comfortable with us in the home. Sometimes people just, in terms of professional organizing or aging in place, when people want to age in place in their homes, just getting that jump start and giving them some tools and making them feel good so they can continue the process on their own, or we keep coming back. But yeah, aging in place too, it's going through the home and recalibrating it for their later years, making sure there's plenty of room to ambulate between the pieces of furniture, getting rid of trip hazards like throw rugs, and also making sure that things can easily be accessed, especially things that are used daily, even monthly. So that they're stored between, like, just above your shoulder to about mid-thigh, so that they're easy to get at. Hmm. I mean, I think that's good for everybody.
Yeah, no, really good point. No, I did see that on your website, that you have those packages, and that's great. And so that's kind of short term, but if it's a full on move into assisted living, then that's
strictly hourly. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Strictly hourly, I see.
Yeah, because otherwise it would be a really big package. And I don't know, I fortunately, I'm kind of the target market for what we do. Mm-hmm. If I had a parent who was still living, I don't. And I just know that, especially with an industry that's unfamiliar to me, I don't want to buy some big package deal when I don't exactly know. And so that's why we put together that project plan and that estimate. And then they pick and choose how they want to work with us. It's so important that they have that way, in a time when they feel like they're out of control, their lives are out of control, this is something they can feel in control of, how much they're working with us.
And so could you walk into a house and sort of assess, like, oh, I think this is going to take a couple of weeks for us to really pack, sort through, or I don't know, what's your usual?
It depends. And I am not trying to be coy here. It varies so widely. Okay, so let's say your standard, say, two or three bedroom home with a garage. Well, okay, but how big is it? How much room is there? Because you can have tight bedroom spaces or big bedroom spaces. And then, of course, the all important, what's the volume of items in there? And I have walked into homes where it's immaculate, and opening the cabinets and the drawers, they are packed with stuff. It's all behind doors and drawers and things like that. Closets are fast. Some of them, it's just stuff hanging there. More often than not, there's stuff hanging. Certainly it's bunched in. And then there are items on the shelves. There are all kinds of things on the floor. Sometimes there's a way into the attic, in the closet. So until we get there, and also it's important, if we're able to get a sense of the person that we're working with. Are they very methodical? How attached to items and things are they? Because we're just only glimpsing the human brain and how complex it is. That at some point they're going to discover, with people who hoard, that there's some part of their brain that deals with emotions and connections, emotional connections, that there must be, for people who hoard, there's a bigger part that attaches to things versus to people, or living things versus inanimate objects. Because I really feel that people who have a severe case of hoarding disorder, that literally when you take things out, especially if they don't want you to, which is not what we do, but, you know, a family member is sick of this and they start throwing things out, literally they feel that, like they feel that being physically taken from them. It's painful, physically painful to them. And it's hard for someone who doesn't hoard to understand that.
Yeah. So I guess you're accounting, like when you said you have to meet people and see how they're able to part with their things, that all goes into the time.
Into
so you're sort
time.
Of assessing the time that it's going to take to go through their stuff.
I always ask permission, can I look in your drawers and cabinets, please? Because, and rarely does anybody say no to that. I just said, I need to see what's in here. And also what state of organization it's in. It's there's no average. Every situation is different. It's never boring. Just like your job, it's never boring. It's never the same.
No two jobs are alike. It's true.
It's fascinating. It's not, if you feel comfortable going to your desk and everything feels familiar to you every single day, that's great. What we do and what you do, it's not a job for you.
Yeah. And I do like the idea that you go to the next location and map out where you're measuring what's going to fit where, no surprises.
Yeah. Even when assisted living communities or any kind of community provides you with a floor plan, it's important to still go there and actually measure it because things are off a bit. Also, frequently in corners of rooms in these communities, there might be in a corner kind of a cutout of about a square foot where, say, the piping's going, the plumbing, the electrical, whatever. But when you have somebody who, especially if it's a small space and or they really love their items, that square foot can make a huge difference. Also, the windows, where do they start? Can you put a couch there or will it block part of the window? Also, where's the emergency pole? Where's the link to the internet, the cable, the phone? Where's the light coming in from? Is there overhead lighting? Where's that? To get a sense of where you need to put lamps. All of that stuff is really important. Do they have any kind of an entryway? So they have a little entryway. Okay, make sure to put a beautiful photos or paintings, especially if they have dementia. They're walking into this room. Where are you taking me? And it's a place they've lived for several months, but it's dementia. It's unfamiliar. Well, as they see those photos of family members, because they're, you know, maybe there's still some long-term memory there. Oh, this is familiar. And that it's more comforting to them. So you have to take all of that into consideration. So that's why it's important, even if you have a floor plan from a community, to go there and actually measure it and note where all those other things are. And it helps move day go so much more smoothly. Mind you, even on a move day, you've got the floor plan, there's always some tweaking to do, but there's a plan to start from.
Yeah, no, these are great, great points that you don't think about. You really don't think about.
Yeah, we don't move frequently.
Yeah, so infrequently that when we have to, it's just really, oh my gosh, so overwhelming.
And especially when it's your parents.
Yeah.
And you're kind of in charge of the move when you're dealing with mom and dad. And usually you have your own kids, that those demands and things like that. And people don't really consider, our culture doesn't really consider the impact on the adult child. And having been that adult child, I'll often say to clients or to the adult children with their parents, I'll just say, thank you for being such a great son or daughter. Almost always the reaction is like, oh, well, I'm not that great. What? So no, thank you for doing this, because we work with people who don't have that kind of support. Either they don't have kids, or I think even worse, they have kids who just turn their backs on them.
Or like you mentioned, who've died, which is so sad.
Yeah. Oh God. Mm. Yeah.
So you mentioned that you guys are all over the country, all over the world. How do I find someone like you in my city?
You're so wonderful. Well, you go to, it's the National Association of Senior and Specialty Move Managers. And it's actually NASMN.org, NASMN, NASM, National Association of Senior and Specialty Move Managers.org. And you can go there, plug in the zip code of where you need that assistance, and you'll get a whole list. Look for things like accreditation. We were the first nationally accredited company in our industry in the LA area. Also look for certifications, things like that, the amount of time they've been in business. Check the reviews on Yelp. And I'm not a huge fan of Yelp, but it can come in handy every so often. They can also just contact me at clearhomesolutions.com. And I'm happy to hook them up with my colleagues in different areas.
That's great. And congratulations on your accreditation. That's terrific.
Thank you. I find that you can't dabble in this business. In other, like if they're just doing organizing and things like that, they can dabble. You got to be serious about what you're doing here, because people rely on you too much. And so do communities, people who refer their clients to you. you have to really be there for people. So that you have to really be serious about the kind of business you're in, because it's such a service, just like yours is. In your case, you're literally taking people's lives and helping them journey through them from a physical sense and a mental sense and psychiatric sense. And in a way, we're not in charge of their physical well-being, but in terms of their legacy for the generations and also for themselves, just easing that way from one place to another. And of course, assisted living communities, I mean, someone cooks for you, someone cleans. If you don't feel well, they're there for you. And plus, you're in an environment with your contemporaries. They remember things the way you do. They remember the 60s as an adult versus, say, me, who remembers it as a teeny little kid. And so you can have these conversations about, oh, where were you when? And it's just, it's this whole new community, all those activities. And especially for people who have dementia, their special training, they know how to keep you engaged and comforted as much as possible.
Yeah, they are trained to do that. Well, Marty, thank you. This has been an education in moving, which I know is so, I have to say for clients, it's oftentimes the worst day when they're moving their spouse into a memory care unit, how difficult it is. So people like you really make that so much more smooth, just ease their minds in a way. It's really something. So I applaud you. I commend you for the job that you do, your team, who, and all my clients, it's really been a job spectacularly done. So I thank you.
Oh, thank you, Barbara. It's an honor to work with you. I truly appreciate that you bring us into the team that works with your clients. And it's always an honor and a pleasure to shepherd these people and these families through this whole process.
Thank you for coming on today.
Thank you for joining us today on another episode of Dementia Discussions. If you're a caregiver or know someone who's a caregiver that would like to be a guest on the show, please call me at 310-362-8232 or go to dementiadiscussions.net/contact. And let me know. It takes courage, because not everyone's willing to do that. I would love to have you. Remember that you can follow Dementia Discussions on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and many more. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, it would mean a lot if you would leave a review. For any other information about this podcast, please visit me at dementiadiscussions.net. And please share this podcast with someone you know if you think it may help. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you here again next time on Dementia Discussions.